Right now, you're listening to Hip Hop Digest with E Green, King Killer B, and Kurt G.
Welcome to the Hip Hop Digest show with your man, DJ King Killer.
I'm good about your boy, Kurt G.
And of course, it's E Color. And you know what? If I ruled the world, I would have Curtis Blow on the phone. But I don't rule the world, but guess what? We got Curtis Blow on the phone. What's going on, sir?
Hey, what's up, fellas? What's going on?
Oh, my gosh. Man, we got a legend.
It's an honor to have you on the phone with us.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
No, it's our pleasure.
Yeah, our pleasure. My brother, it's our pleasure.
No doubt. So, anyway, I'm going to hit you right off the break. I'm more of a technical guy. I want to hear technical backstories. And I think the first question that I want to have is as far as your first record, you know, tell the people exactly what your first record was.
Well, my first record was The Christmas Rap. Wow, it was my favorite song out of all of them still to this day. And it started off, you know, in the mid-70s, just being around hip-hop before records were out. See, we were rapping, scratching, breaking, and doing graffiti 7-8 years in the Bronx and Harlem, and then it spread around the five boroughs to Queens and Brooklyn and, you know, Staten Island, Connecticut, New Jersey. And this whole thing was like a culture, just a change, a way of life, and a whole society of people who loved disco. Disco music was the hot thing during that time in the 70s. So we came out of that era. You know, you had the disco that was playing on the radio, you know, YMCA and Village People, Donna Summers and Patrick Jobey and Evelyn Champagne King and that type of stuff. But we up in the ghetto, we loved the music of James Brown and the Motown sound. We grew up from the 60s, you know, with the funk and Parliament Funkadelic and on and on and on. So there was a group of people who only played that music, that type of music, in a world of disco. And we went on to dance a special way to this music, playing James Brown music in the world, in the disco club. And people would just lose their mind because it was just funky, and the breaks were just incredible, and we started dancing so crazy that we created circles of people around us called a cypher, and we were doing acrobatics, and everybody was trying to do the footwork of James Brown, like on Soul Train, and he was an incredible dancer. So that spawned a whole new way of dance. See, the culture, the music, the way we dance to the music, the way we walk, the way we talk, it was all a part of the culture of what we now call hip-hop. And that dance was breakdancing, a lot of footwork, a lot of acrobatics. We'd go down to the floor and do splits and come back up and do fast footwork. And man, we were the greatest dancers. So the people who went and hung out, I came out of that era being one of the breakdancers, of course, then starting to DJ, and then I got the opportunity to make my first record, Christmas Rap, which actually was on the heels of the Sugar Hill Gang because of that song. Rapper's Delight was so hot on the radio. Every car, every bus, every train, everybody played that song. They say it sold about 17 million records worldwide, and it started everything off for everyone with a bang. And I jumped on the heels of that and got a major record deal. Got on a major label. My first song was on a major label, Mercury Polygram Records. So that was major. That means we had an office in every major city around the world. And I was a college student working the system, the corporation, the bureaucracy of this big multimedia corporate. I'm talking about the publicity department, the promo department, the video department, the art department, the A&R department, the legal department, accounting. I know everybody. You know what I'm saying?
You was putting in work, huh?
So Christmas Rap was just an idea. We say, what are we gonna do different, you know, to come out here banging? Because I was a rapper already, and my producers knew this. And they said they came up with the idea to make a song that would last forever.
Mm. That's, you know, what's
we
up.
We're coming up on Christmas. Let's make a song about Santa Claus visiting a home down in the ghetto and on Christmas Eve, and he just hangs out and have a party and gives everybody presents and then bones out. But we at the party, and I'm bringing the whole hip-hop vibe of a party. That's where we started from. Again, going back to the club. So Christmas rap was like that club feel, and the crowd response was the biggest thing about the early hip-hop before, you know, the records. We rocked the house with the crowd. Say ho, scream. And I put that, like, as far as Santa Claus being at that party, we partied at the second part of Christmas rap. And that was the part of the record that had never been, it was like Cab Calloway on record, crowd response. So wow. If you played this, it was actually, you're like at a club and you play this in a club and everybody started doing the crowd response. Everybody screamed in the club, wherever you was around the country. It was the most amazing thing. So the song lasted in the clubs playing. I mean, I'm talking about the hottest record for a DJ to play. It's 8 minutes long, you know, and it would rock the house because everybody was calling back with the crowd response. And it played from Christmas, not only December 19th, 1979, all the way up until the summer. The next summer of 1980.
I got two quick ones for you to go off of what something you said. First of all, I apologize because I didn't know you were a breaker until I saw you and all the pictures and everything doing the Nutcracker, the Hip Hop Nutcracker. And right now you're doing up rocking and whatnot.
Yes, sir. So, yes, sir.
That was crazy. That was crazy.
And praise God.
The second thing I wanted to ask you about was because you mentioned Sugar Hill, and at that time, 79, 78. There was a whole lot of groups, you know what I'm saying? And you're like one of the folks that came along right at the cusp when the MC started taking over, like the one person. Was there any issue with that, or how did you feel about that, like in that situation, not having a crew, so to speak, but just being you, being out in the forefront?
That's a very good question. You know, that's a controversy that has been going on in music since the beginning of music, you know, a group of musicians as opposed to a solo, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was just a career move, a very, very smart career move. Again, I said, you know, I was in college, so I did my research when I got a record deal. I Russell Simmons and I were both in college together. We were partners. And he took a leave of absence from college as a senior before a whole 6 months before I did. I waited until the breaks. And we put out Christmas rap and I was still in college. So I'm doing my research about music and everything, studying the history of music. And I found out that the solo artists usually last longer and they have longevity because there's no fights. Groups always break up. They break up in history. So I decided a long time ago to be a solo artist. Now, that was just only a business decision, you know, straight out of college.
Right.
But when you talk about just the controversy of it, you know, that's the whole thing. The groups always want to get paid more because it's a group of people as opposed to a solo artist. But I'm always sticking to my guns like, well, I do five times. It's five of y'all. I do five times as much work as each one of y'all. You know what I'm saying? But there's less drama. There's less drama. Less fights on the road. There's less confusion when you talk about travel and business and it's one entity as opposed to making, you know, having three people to sign checks. It's easier, you know.
Yeah, but, it's made it an easy answer.
Yeah, you know,
ain't a whole lot to it.
Yeah. My
business.
Yeah, my question. On three particular records that I'm looking at, obviously Christmas Rapping, Party Time, and The Breaks. Well, I want to talk about, or give me your impressions of the late great Larry Smith. You know, I know he played on your records. He is so underrated. He's one of my favorite topics, and it's such a pleasure, you know, to hear your, you know, your thoughts about Larry Smith and what he contributed to your records.
You know, when you asked, when just the mention of his name, Larry Smith, it sent, like, I got this rush of adrenaline, like, you know, like, it hit me. It was like his spirit, like, really touched me. And that was my brother. I mean, he was everything behind Curtis Blow in the beginning. I remember this meeting when I first met my producers, when they decided to make this song, and I went up to talk the creative thing out, and we were sitting around for the first time with the two producers, J.B. Moore and Robert Ford, and then there was Denzel Miller, who was a great pianist, and this guy Larry Smith, who was a friend of Robert Ford's out there in Queens, but he was the bass player in a band, and they all had a band. It's Jamaica Funk, the Queens crew, all of those cats, like Bernard Wright, Omar Keem, the drummer. I went to high school with Omar Keem. He's a drummer for Sting. Marcus Miller, great bass player, studio musician, also out there in Queens. So all these cats in Queens were musicians, were hanging out. And Larry Smith was an incredible bass player. And I went up and met this guy for the first time at this apartment down on 45th Street, J.B. Moore's apartment. We walked upstairs to the third floor. I'm 19 years old, so I get in an apartment and sit down, meet this guy, Larry Smith, dark-skinned brother, about 10 years older than me. Yeah, he's about 28, 29. And we're sitting down and we're talking about Christmas rap and to make an annual record that will live forever. And they talk about the music, the sound. So Larry came out, he said, "Yo, Kurt, so what kind of sound would you like?" I said, "Sound? What do you mean sound?" "Well, you know, sound, like your style, what style of music, you know?" And I was like, I thought about it. He said, "Well, who's your favorite artist?" I said, "James Brown." Right? He said, "Okay, that's James Brown." Then I thought about it. I said, "The music of today, disco, that's the hottest thing, pop music that's on the radio right now, was Chic, right?" Mm-hmm. And that Good Time song was the number one song. As a matter of fact, that's what Rappers Delight came from, is the same bass line, right?
Right.
Right.
And so I said, "Okay, Chic is the number one, like, artist out right now on the radio. So how about a style of disco, this disco Chic, Good Times, and James Brown mixed up?" So that's my sound, and it came from Larry Smith, and I owe him that. And he stuck to his guns. As a matter of fact, he created Run DMC and Houdini as the antithesis to the Curtis Blow sound. Run DMC sound was electronic, synthesizers, bass, harder, hardcore. When I had original music, I mean, original instruments, real instruments, you know what I'm saying? Like James Brown and the funk from the 70s and the 60s. But then here comes Run DMC with this new wave, like an Africa Bambaataa and R&B. And then Houdini, which was a real cross in between Curtis Blow and Run DMC. They had synthesizer sounds, but it was more R&B, like playing real music, but having choruses and you know, more of a R&B sound. And so Larry was a great producer. He went on to have a legacy between him, myself, Russell Simmons, and Davey DMX. We had a dynasty quite like Sugar Hill and the Sugar Hill Gang Records. We were producing like 75-80% of the hip hop that came out from 83 to about 89.
Yeah, indeed, no doubt. Actually, so I gotta ask you, I'm gotta ask you about records, just things I always wanted to know. So you certainly produced the Fat Boys.
Right.
And the record that I want to ask you about is Jailhouse Rap, and who actually played the keyboard. That is, that the keyboard work and that music, or the piano work in Jailhouse Rap, is incredible. You know what I mean?
You hit You hit, see, I got that feeling again, that same adrenaline. you hit, that's the pinpoint, the heart of Curtis Blow and the Curtis Blow sound is that piano solo, that cocktail, James Brown piano. It's like Sex Machine when James Brown does the piano solo.
Yeah, no that? Doubt. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
now let me say this. The man who did it, it wasn't Denzel Miller. Now, Denzel Miller played the piano solo on Christmas Rapping and The Breaks.
Okay, right.
Now, after that, when I started producing myself with the Fat Boys, Gangs People Play, continuing that sound, right?
Right.
8 Million Stories.
Oh,
we
yeah.
had that same kind of piano solo. But the guy who did it there was a student of Denzel Miller, and his name was Donald Blackman. Rest in peace. He just died about 2 years ago. Incredible piano player. And that's the guy who pulled off that James Brown thing more so than ever. And he hit the nail on the head, and I love him. Those piano solos will live forever, and they are classic.
They are incredible. Yes.
I just thank God for him,
yes.
Donald Blackman.
They are incredible.
Cool.
Really expressing it, you know?
Yes, sir. So let me ask you this. Being that we are, you know, we're not little young whippersnappers anymore, and we love hip hop, and we ain't never going to leave it. And we talk about it weekly about why. Can you tell us what keeps you in the game? What is it about this genre of music that makes you never want to let it go?
Well, basically, it's music anyway. And, you know, in life, we have love, sex, drugs, and music. That's what they say. if I had to choose one of the three, I would say music, because number one, it will last forever. You know, we are scientists of sound, and it's just fascinating. Well, what keeps me in the game now really is all of the new styles and the transitions, and now I have sons, and we all talk about this. One is an engineer, one is a rapper on working on his third album. My youngest son, Mikey, does everything, and we're talking about, you know, the hip hop flows of today, and I'm trying to say, yo, I could do this trap sound, man. Let me go there. They say, no, you gotta keep it real, Pop. You gotta stay with the old school, man. Keep it gully. And they like, you know, and I'm trying to, like, we just going through it. So it's just the challenges of trying or you know, this, I mean, the flows are incredible. I love them. I know I can do it. I just want to get my voice on a record and say, look, oh, that's Curtis Blow.
No, we don't want you to do that.
No, don't do it. Don't do it.
This is why I'm still in the game, because, you know, I just have so much love for it. And to see where it's going and how it's going, I mean, we have the opportunity. We have changed the world. We can influence politics. We can influence wars. We can stop wars. I mean, we have the ability to really express ourselves. We're the voice of people. So we have all of this real power right now. We live in a hip hop generation. We live in a hip hop nation.
Wow, that's it's interesting to hear you say it like that. And, you know, it's refreshing to hear you say it, because a lot of us older folks, we don't really get down with some of the stuff that's out here right now. But I'm hearing you.
There's a way you can look at it. I hear my brothers, a lot of brothers don't like the music that's out. I mean, I talk to people over 50, over 40. Yeah, it's a generation. It's a hip hop generation, but there's a generation gap. There's a real generation gap.
Yeah, but you know what I think it's more of? This is my personal thoughts. I think it's just a lack of diversity, because I don't have any problem with Future or any of them cats, right? I don't have any problem with that, but we need to hear more folks that have a different sound than just that, because when you were doing it wasn't just one style, you know what I'm saying?
I listened to Kendrick Lamar. And I like his flow. He's kind of fast and sick with it, and he changes up his styles. He can rap regular, he can go double time. You know, he's all right. I mean, there's some talent out there. There are some Oh, there's some bad dudes out there, though. I mean,
bad meaning bad.
You ain't got to name them. We'll do that.
Yeah, no doubt.
I am not naming any names.
No, that's what we do.
So I was on YouTube last Saturday, and I was listening to a lot of new cats, and I was like, "Oh my God, I can do this much better."
Like, we know you can.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
So
and that's what keeps me in the game. It's fun, man. It's a fun job. It's a real fun job. But just the challenges, trying to meet the challenges, and you know, still breakdancing, still b-boying at 55, 56. I mean, I'm just loving it. And I love the faces, the look on people's faces when they see me do this. And we out there and we do live shows, and that's what it's all about. It's entertainment. And when people leave the concerts, you know, I know our job has been done, and our job is to make people feel good inside when they leave the concert. And that's missing.
That's it. You're exactly right. And I was going to say that I don't want to say back in the day, but at a certain time it was about putting on a show, not just getting up on the stage berating people. You know what I'm saying? So it was a different scene. So definitely, I see what you're talking about.
That's real. So Curtis, I gotta ask you, being at the since we're talking about MCs, being the time that you come in, we usually try to ask our guests your favorite three of all time. I'm not asking you to say a qualified list for everybody, but your personal favorite three MCs for you personally of all time.
Well, I mean, you know, before the MCs, I was really inspired by James Brown, Jimmy Caster, and let's say, you know, if anybody, Sam Cooke.
Wow.
But if you talk about MCs, I base my style like the philosophies of another one of my heroes, Bruce Lee. He was asked about his fighting style, what kind of fighting style. He said, my style is more like a combination of the bits and pieces and the greatest parts of all the different styles, like jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, you know what I'm saying, kung fu. He takes all the styles, the best parts of all the styles, and puts them together and creates his own style. And that's his Bruce Lee style, his own style. So I based that philosophy about my rap style when I first started MCing. And that was DJ Hollywood, because he had the golden voice. He was the master of crowd response, crowd participation. You know, that's where I get to say ho. Everybody scream, throw your hands in the air. All the ladies in the house say ow. All that stuff comes from the master Hollywood and Eddie Chiba and Love Bug Starsky. Now, Love Bug was another cat that I based my style around, because he was versatile. He could DJ and MC at the same time.
Wow.
For 2 or 3 hours, hold it down for 4 hours. You know what I'm saying? A real DJ and MC at the same time. And then the third person was Melly Mel. Now, Melly Mel was rapping about 77. I ran into him, but we're in the same gang in 1975 up in the Bronx, the Peacemakers. But he was the MC. He was the MC's MC. He's the MC that could rap nonstop, rhythmic rap straight for 2 hours straight. Just rhyme. Just a great writer, incredible cat, nonstop MC. Now he has adapted his style, so now he's more of a crowd participated guy. He has routines and he's incredible. So he has evolved in his own career. But in the beginning, he's the rapper's rapper, Melly Mel. So, you know, I out of all those three styles, I'll take the bits and pieces that are the best, and definitely not repeating anybody's mistakes.
Ah, indeed.
All right.
Indeed.
No. So it's my turn to ask the serious question that I always ask the legends when they come on. I got to ask you this. How do you feel about your legacy in hip hop? And you could, I mean, whatever you feel, there it is. What do you feel about your legacy?
Well, in a nutshell, I would say you know, KurtBlow.com. No, I'm just joking.
Got to plug something.
That was crazy, right? No. My legacy is one of, I've seen hip hop from the beginning. I'm one of the cats who was there. One of the really, you could say, pioneer. One of the first cats to blaze the trail. But it's not only that, I know the difference between, I mean, I've been to a Kool Herc party, I've been to a Pete DJ Jones party, and I know the difference between the two, and that's something I hold dear in my heart. But not only that, I have the stats. When you talk about the 7-8 years before hip hop, when we were just in New York, and then going to making the records in 79, you know, King Tim III with Personality Jop, and then yeah. Rapper's Delight in 1979, Sugar Hill in the summer, and then Christmas Rap in December. Spoonie G, Grandmaster Flash did We Rap So Mellow, you know. And those first few records, I call it the jump into light speed. That was when we got the opportunity to go global. And I call it the jump in the light speed. A lot of cats didn't make the jump, but I have the stats, the first stats, first signed to a major label, first certified gold rap song, the breaks, the first plat, first certified gold. I have the second certified 12-inch in the history of music. The first certified gold 12-inch was Barbara Streisand and Donna Summer's Enough Is Enough. I have the second certified gold 12-inch in the history of music.
Wow.
I was the first to tour the United States. I just saw Sugar Hill Gang on this Unsung show.
Yeah, that came on yesterday.
They were the first to tour around the world and take this thing around. And but see, I got to beg to differ, because we were at the same time and we both should share that light. And I was on a major label and it was documented. I can prove it.
Yeah, because no doubt.
When I say I was on a major label, that means a major office. I would roll, and I'm saying I worked the system. So I got with the promotions department and went on promos tours. The first one in 1980, 30 shows in 33 days,
wow,
and all around Europe. You hear me? And when I got to each city, like I'd go to Paris or Belgium, I go to the office. Go to the office by 11 o'clock. From 12 o'clock to 5 o'clock, I have interviews from newspapers and magazines and television, radio. I mean, everything. It was documented from this major, major label that had all the power, and I worked the system. So it was documented. I'm saying the first to go to Paris. First, Blondie flew me out to England, to the UK in 1980. I was the first to go to the UK. Sat me up. We did a big press conference. Like I'm talking about press, major press, like a press conference. Cameras all around. I never seen this thing. I'm 19, 20. No, I'm 20 years old now. And Blondie did this. Debbie Harry flew me out to the UK. And so from there, I went to all the places first, and it was just an amazing year, 1980, 79. It was a dream world. I thank God that I was in the right place at the right time. And, you know, I got the stats. So that's my legacy. I got all the stats. First tour, first endorsement, first national commercial, first on Soul Train, first on American Bandstand with Dick Clark. You know, so
wow, yeah,
certified.
What does your boy say? The numbers don't lie, do they?
Yeah. It's the stats. I got the stats, man. The numbers don't lie. So if you want to say pioneer, Davy Crockett, I'm Davy. Davy.
That's what's up. I don't know, man. I could probably think up a billion questions to ask you, because I'm on record. I think it was last year we were talking about amongst ourselves about who our, you know, all-time MCs are, and I said your name, and you can go back. That's, I got the stats to show that.
Oh, you patting yourself on the back right now, huh?
Yeah, I said that. So
you know what, Chuck D just quoted something on Twitter about maybe 2 months ago. And he said, Curtis Blow has the all-time relevant hip-hop record in hip-hop's history. And that was that Christmas rap. Because they play it every year.
Yeah.
And I want to thank the media, guys like you, communications. You know, I'm a communications major, so I feel you guys, your job. I mean, I love you guys. And I just want to say thank you to radio around the country in general, because you guys made that happen for me. And they've been playing that thing like Nat King Cole every year.
No doubt.
You know what I'm saying? You know, even Run DMC had to come with another one. Because they saw oh, you can't last forever, Kurt. We gotta last forever too.
So, yeah, no doubt.
That's incredible.
You know, the real knows the real. I say the first is the best, I must confess.
No doubt. And I got one more before I let you get out of here, man. So you played yourself in Crush Groove.
Right.
What was that like?
Well, Ed, that Crush Groove was amazing. It, again, another dream world. Again, and that was way in 1984. So I'm from 79, 80, I kind of took a dip. And I was on my way back, 82, 83. I started producing, and then I came back. And boom, we get this movie deal, Crush Groove. Run DMC is hot. You know, they make King of Rock. I make If I Rule the World. Boom. The movie was incredible. I remember having to do the soundtrack to the movie. But not only that, I had to record my album, the America album, and the Fat Boys' second album. So I was recording three albums at one time and showing up on the set of the movie at 6 a.m.
So that's crazy.
I had three studios going. Man jumped from one studio to another all night long and then wake up. Wow, wow. It was crazy. In 1 month that we did this. We shot the Crush Groove in 3 weeks.
Wow. So
it was a lot of work. And after that, I really got burnt out and wanted to quit. But it was amazing. I remember Prince came down on the set to support Sheila E. And he was in the background sitting there printing. Prince came to, you know, hang out with us.
Wow.
And I produced that soundtrack and got the opportunity to work with Sheila E. I wrote her rap in the finale song, Crush Groovin'. And she sang on it. That was nice. That was amazing.
No doubt. Just
have everybody represent. It was fun, man. It was beautiful.
Wow. You had a whole lot of superstars in there that night.
yes. But actually, the biggest thing I would say about my legacy that I want people to never forget is my producing and my biggest song for me that I gave the world and was a part of, and I thank God for, was that Martin Luther King song, King Holiday.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody with Run DMC and the Fat Boys and Houdini and Whitney Houston, rest in peace, and Tina Marie, rest in peace, and El DeBarge, Stephanie Mills, JT and Kool and the Gang. Menudo was even in there. Ricky Martin is in there.
Man. Oh, man.
Shout out to Wilson Boys. New Kids on the Block.
New Kids on the Block. I'd love to share there.
That's incredible.
New Edition, Bobby Brown. Was
no
awesome.
Doubt.
No doubt.
Indeed.
You got any more questions, Killer? Kurt?
Nah, I could sit here and ask questions.
I heard him say Pete DJ Jones. I was going to ask him. He went to a party. I was going to ask him about flowers and all of them back in the day.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Pete DJ Jones represents that whole side of the coin, man. That was real hardcore. What we call street disco, or I would say middle class African American disco. You had, you know, you had white disco, but we're talking middle class and upper middle class blacks who had jobs during that time in the 70s, from 70, I'm saying from 70 to about 78, whoa, disco is crazy. You work all week, you have a job, you know, and then you work all week, but on the weekends, Friday, Saturday nights, you dress up in suit and tie and silk dresses, go downtown to Midtown clubs in Midtown Manhattan, top of the world, be in a club. Disco world ball is really bright on the center of the room, and it's strobe lights flashing all around with glass mirrors. You gotta have mirrors all around the club, right? Wow. And reflecting and everything, and everybody's looking fly with the fly girls. You seeing fly girls from Queens, like, whoa. And it's just, you dance your night away. You work hard a week, dance your night. That was it, man. And Pete was a part of that, the biggest part. He was New York's number one DJ. That's, and when you talk about, you know, M. Martin Hall and Winston Sanders and Jerry Roebuck, you know, it comes out of that era. We're talking the elite disco. Flash calls them the shoe people and the sneaker people. See, wow. You had the sneaker people because you had to wear shoes. You couldn't get into the Midtown. Yeah, there's dress code. But uptown, in the parks and block parties and community centers and the gyms and house parties, you wore your sneakers. There's no dress code. You wore your hat backwards in your jeans.
No doubt. Yeah.
And you started b-boying.
There you go.
You couldn't b-boy in the club, though, with shoes on. They said, what you doing? They said, what you doing, man? So it's two different crowds. So Pete was a part of the shoe people, and that was Flowers, Maboya, Plumbers, Rip and Cliff, the Disco Twins, Eddie Cheever, Reggie Wells, DJ Hollywood, Love Bus Starsky, again, versatile DJ and MC that could play for both the shoe people and the sneaker people. Now you talk about the sneaker people, that's Kool Herc, Bambaataa, Grandmaster Flash, the Cold Crush Brothers, the Furious Five, the Fantastic Four, the Treacherous Three, you know. And I'm bouncing back and forth. Actually, I started with disco, but I had to get, I'm a B-boy. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, so, sir.
and the disco crowds hate me because I'm a B-boy. I'm a B-boy, right? And the B-boys, they don't like me. They think I'm a disco DJ. So,
wow.
The knowledge is incredible.
Yes, we can listen to you all night.
Oh, man, it's just amazing. It was a whole world, and I'll never forget it. It's what I hold dear in my heart, my big legacy, and just, you know, just being around all of that stuff. We live in a lifetime where, wow, I got to meet Michael Jackson and the great musicians and my heroes. I got to meet James Brown. And Jimmy Castor and man, Aretha Franklin and Stevie Wonder knows me, man. I'm saying, I got, you know, it's just a beautiful, beautiful way of life. And I just thank God for this culture, this way of life, this whole society of people is a blessing. Because how many people have you heard say, hip hop saved my life?
A lot of people, including myself, right? No doubt.
I'm one of them.
Yes.
It's a fun job, man. Fun job. No doubt. Thank you.
And speaking of that, what are you doing with yourself now? Where can people find Curtis Blow right now?
You can go to KurtBlow.com and find out more about me. My Instagram is CurtisBlow100. Twitter is CurtisBlow1. You know, the number one. And yeah, man, shout out to the Hip Hop Nutcracker. I'm doing that this year.
Yeah, I missed it when you were here in Charlotte. It was sold out, bro. I couldn't even get a press pass to get in there.
The great look for hip hop, you know, just incredible breakdancing to classical music of Tchaikovsky. And it's a classic play just flipped to a hip hop style. And it's amazing. I'm the MC. I get you in the mood. And we end the show with the breaks with everybody. And it's
crazy.
A good look for hip hop. So look out for that. And also, I want to give a shout out to the museum. On the serious note, we are trying to put together a universal hip hop museum.
Yes.
It's about damn time.
Yes. We need
it
badly.
In the Bronx. And I need you guys to support us. tell everybody about this.
You got
it's
it.
With the founding members of hip hop, and we're growing every day. We need you guys to actually be a part of the advisory board. I'll talk to you about that. All right?
No and, doubt.
No problem.
The website is uhhm.org. uhhm.org.
Locking
Universal
in.
Hip Hop Museum, about the preservation and securing and supporting our history. And not only that, just supporting the future of hip hop as well through our history. And it's very, very important. I can't explain how important it is for us to document our history and have it in one place where we can have it there forever and ever and ever. Amen.
Hey, we are down by law. You could best believe it.
Yes, we are.
Yes. Okay, fellas. Thank you very much for the evening.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, man. It's been an honor.
Yeah. Thanks for it's incredible.
No doubt. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having us, because we're just soaking up everything.
You talk about this culture being a beautiful thing. This culture got us to talk to a legend like you.
Exactly. Exactly. One of my all-time favorites. So, appreciate it, man.